Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Welcome to JS on Politics. I'm your host, Greg Borowski, and this is our post-election show where we'll go over some of the results from Tuesday and what they mean going forward. Here's a look at today's lineup. So there was a reason Donald Trump spent so much time in Wisconsin. We'll look at how he won the state and how the state helped him win the presidency. Ron Johnson got a second term. What was behind his come-from-behind win? We'll also look at other races in the state and how the results may shake up things going forward. There are plenty of winners and losers on Tuesday. We'll give you some of ours, and we'll tackle some viewer questions. But first, let's start at the presidential level and introduce our panel. We've got Craig Gilbert from the Washington Bureau, who's still in town before he goes back, and Mary Scusa from our downtown office, who covered the campaign, start to finish, all the ups and downs and ins and outs. So let's start by looking at this graphic, which is in our paper today, and with your story, Craig, on the turnout and how that compared to some of the other elections. Talk a little bit about how that shaped what happened on
Tuesday. So when the state elections officials predicted a turnout of 3.1 million on the level of 08 and 12, a lot of people wondered how Republicans could win a race like that, because those kinds of turnouts are typically better for Democrats. It was a little bit below that, and I think that was helpful for Republicans up and down the ticket. But it was a case where some aspects of the Democratic base didn't turn out at the level they did in for Obama 4 years ago. Young voters were a smaller part of the electorate. African-American voters did not deliver quite the margins they did for Obama, for Clinton, which in a close race like this really matters. And then, of course, you just had, you know, rural white voters and blue-collar white voters voting by huge margins, unprecedented margins for Trump.
Yeah, is that a suggestion that Democrats are losing that demographic, particularly in the Wisconsin and the upper Midwest?
Yeah, I mean, what's concerning for Democrats is that a lot of these voters in other parts of the country had already left the party. They were losing ground with those voters, but they were hanging on to a lot of them. I mean, Obama won the white-collar, the blue-collar white vote in 08, and he didn't lose it by that much 4 years ago. But Hillary Clinton lost it by a lot. Obama won rural voters 8 years ago and didn't lose them by much 4 years ago. She lost them by 29 points in Wisconsin, according to the exit polls. Those are margins in a state where the rural vote is a third of the electorate that you can't make up for.
Yeah, so Mary, going into this, the pollsters, the predictors, all the models weren't expecting anything like this. Who are all these voters that were missed? I know you've been talking to some of the voters and others, but who are they? What was motivating them to be behind Donald Trump, or at least be opposed to Hillary Clinton?
You know, some of the voters that I talked to at some of the Trump rallies around the state, some in Janesville, some in Green Bay area, really were not regular Republican voters. These were voters who often don't turn out at the polls, who they would say, this is the first race I've gotten excited about, this is the first time I've been engaged. So I think he did a good job of making inroads among some of those rural voters. And obviously with Clinton not getting the votes in the city of Milwaukee that Obama did, I think the difference of him reaching out to voters and her having people who showed up 4 and 8 years ago not show up really hurt her, helped
him. I mean, Hillary Clinton, though, actually did better in Dane County than Barack Obama did, but not as well in Milwaukee County than Obama. Is that what's driving that? Do you think is it strictly a racial thing or a political thing?
Dane County has become just more and more lopsidedly Democratic. It's increasingly mobilized. I think in the Walker years, that's been a spur. So I think there's kind of a dynamic in Dane County, independent of who the candidates are, where they're just delivering bigger landslides for the Democrats. And Donald Trump was incredibly unpopular there. So that was a big part of what was going on there. But just back to what Mary said, I mean, one of the really interesting numbers in the exit polls is that the voters who had qualms about both candidates broke overwhelmingly for Trump, and I think some of them broke at the end. We had that undecided vote, and we had her kind of hitting a ceiling. We had him, several points trailing her, but I think there were a bunch of voters at the end that had problems with both candidates that decided to vote to sort of cast a shake the things up vote. And that's why you saw him, you know, even though he had a 63% unfavorable rating in the exit poll, 20% of those voters voted for him, which is pretty remarkable.
And I think the Marquette poll had been so consistently accurate when it came to 2010, the recalls in 2012, Governor Walker's 2014 race, that I think all of us started to think like, well, the Marquette poll has her up, and so, and polls around the country.
Yeah, well, the commentary that we had heard and made on this show, too, is that, well, Hillary Clinton hasn't come back to the state. They must be confident here.
Yeah, her
but
own
if
polls.
You go to the beginning, I mean, there was one point where she was going to come with Barack Obama, and I forget, was it right after the convention, or right, it was like a...
It was canceled because of the Orlando massacre.
Right.
Yeah, the polls.
So at that point, they clearly thought Wisconsin was an important place to go, right?
Well, I think it was just... I think it had more to do with scheduling than anything else. I think they felt good about Wisconsin for a long time, and they got used to winning Wisconsin. Clearly, they would have put more... I mean, the conservative and safe thing for them to do would have been to protect their blue wall. I mean, Wisconsin, Michigan, Pennsylvania, if they protected those states, the outcome would have been different. Instead, they put more energy into trying to expand the map in places like Arizona and trying to win in North Carolina and Florida, which were reasonable decisions. But again, they didn't sort of protect their flank, and people will be second-guessing that for a long time.
Yeah, let's talk about on the Republican side. There's people are saying, and the party leaders, this is a mandate in Washington. They now have all the levers of power there, you know, both chambers and the presidency. Is this a mandate for him? I mean, Hillary Clinton won the popular vote. But does this amount to a mandate, Craig, in Washington?
You know, mandate is kind of an artificial thing. It's really kind of a rationale for going forward with your policy agenda. But, you know, Barack Obama won a more overwhelming mandate in 2008, and 2 years later you had the best Republican election since the 1930s. So it's always good to keep that in mind. It's sort of, it's all about kind of, they have the cards. I mean, they've got unified control. It's about how people react to what they do with that control.
Yeah. Well, Mary, maybe talk about a little bit about, okay, so they have unified control, but are they unified? Are there issues like trade and other things where maybe Donald Trump isn't in step with the Republicans? So what do you see happening there?
I would say they are not necessarily unified. I think that they've been trying to do the come home, you know, right before the election, it was the come home, we have to unify. But, you know, shortly before this, we saw Donald Trump going after Paul Ryan on Twitter and very publicly praising his opponent in the primary. So no, I don't think they are unified. And I guess that's an interesting question to see if Paul Ryan does keep
the greatest speaker. Unifying force for Republicans is Hillary Clinton, and she's now gone from the stage.
Right. Yeah. So up until
power doesn't necessarily help.
Up until Inauguration Day, Paul Ryan's still the top, right. You know, ranking Republican in government. Let's talk about what happens him and his relationship with Donald Trump now. Does Donald Trump need him, or does Donald Trump, you know, exact some sort of revenge on the people who didn't support him?
It would seem to be the smart thing to do for Donald Trump to try to unify his party and consolidate that and work with Congress. And I'm not sure what he would have to gain from trying to push Paul Ryan out of the speakership. I think if he withdrew his support, he could do it because it's his party now. But I don't necessarily think that's going to happen. They're meeting and they're talking and they have some potential common ground, but they also have some real differences.
Yeah. Well, Mary, Donald Trump and the campaign sort of sketched out his platform just in very broad strokes. Now you've got someone like Paul Ryan who has a very detailed plan. So
a little bit more of a policy wonk.
So it seems like he would need that, right? I mean, he needs someone to be able to advance the agenda in Congress in order to get legislation to his desk.
I think this election has taught me to not make too many predictions. No, I think one would think that, yes, it would be helpful for somebody who is not necessarily a detail-oriented policy wonk to have somebody like Paul Ryan around who likes things like hammering out a budget and going down into doing deep dives on the details. So logic would say, yes, it would be helpful to have him around. I just don't know.
I think what's going to be interesting to watch is whether Trump tries to piece together bipartisan coalitions on some issues where he doesn't have unanimous Republican support. I mean, if he wants to put through a big infrastructure spending bill, for example, that's not something that Republicans would have ever supported if Hillary Clinton were president. They may feel obligated to support some of these things for Donald Trump, but maybe not everything on his agenda. But that could really shake up the dynamics in Washington, the dynamics in Congress, to have cross-party coalitions, which we haven't seen in a while.
Yeah, and let's lastly talk about Ryan Priebus, who's another one of the key Wisconsin figures in the recent, you know, years of national politics. A few weeks ago, I was like, is he going to get another term as RNC chair. Now they're talking about him as a potential chief of staff. What's your sense of what he may want to do?
I think he'd like to, you know, stay in Washington and be a part of this.
Yeah. As a party person or as a policy
I think his, you know, having finally won a presidential election, I think, you know, he has options. I think if Trump had lost, I don't think there would have been much question about him sticking around as RNC chair. I think the party would have wanted to go in a new direction because you would have had people that didn't think, you know, that thought he was too supportive of Trump, and then other people that wanted somebody else. So I think he's got options. It'll be really interesting to see whether he whether those options include working for the president directly or staying on the partisan side.
All right. Well, that's one of the things we'll be watching at the national level, and we're going to talk a little bit more now about what happened at the state level and some of the statewide offices in this segment. All right, we're joined now by Dan Bice, our political and Watchdog columnist. Bill Glauber covered the U.S. Senate race.
Let's talk politics.
Yeah, where Ron Johnson was, you know, months ago, even weeks ago, kind of left for dead. Let's show on the screen here how the polls turned out and how they turned out for Ron Johnson, where he's clearly, you know, has a, you know, strong support throughout the state, and won with seeming ease as a surprise.
Yeah, there you see the death of the Democratic Party in Wisconsin. It's right up there on the screen. A party that gets blown out like that doesn't have much of a future if they're getting blown out like that in a presidential year. I realize it was a three-point win for Johnson.
I was going to say a blowout. It's not
3 points. Yeah, but 3 points in a presidential year with...
Right, they should have won.
Yeah, they should have won.
Let's talk about how did Ron Johnson come back and win? Because clearly he was down by all accounts early on, and...
Johnson did it.
Outperformed Donald Trump.
In a lot of ways, he did it on his own. He took charge of his campaign. He ran some softer ads he and his brother worked on, who's in the TV show Home Time, and took charge of his campaign. And then the outside money, it's a perfect Citizens United kind of race that he ran. His campaign did the positive ads, and all the outside groups just slammed Feingold
and
West.
So what you had was something... Where he's able to slice through all of the negativity, because as anybody who watched TV over the last 2 months knows, it was an onslaught of negativity. And then he had these ads, the diaper ad, the one where he just sits and looks at the camera and says, "Vote for me." They came across as genuine, and they came across as different, which was very similar.
As we talked about on election night, that's the flip side of what Russ Feingold did when he got elected the first time.
1992, very similar, very negative. And he was able to slice through with some humorous ads, and they were very different, caught people's attention. The big difference here is, as Bill said, is as a result of Citizens United, outside groups ran negative ads and beat up on Russ Feingold. They didn't have that in 1992.
Right. Yeah, so one of the other headlines out of the night was, I mean, if you remember going in, the Democrats thought they might pick up a couple state Senate seats. They did not, and they, in fact, lost one assembly seat, if I recall. So
they lost,
what's the
they
picture
lost
of
one.
The state legislative?
Right. Yeah, it looks like the Democrats lost one seat in both House. They lost one in the Assembly. They've lost one in the Senate. There is a close race out in La Crosse with Jennifer Jens Schilling against Dan Kopanky. Last I saw, I think she's up 58 votes, so I don't know if there's a recount there or not. But going in, Schilling said she was bullish on their chances. She expected the Democrats to pick up at least two seats, and in the end, she ends up fighting for her political life.
So that a factor of the candidates at that race like that, or is it simply because if you've got Ron Johnson performing so well and Donald Trump performing so well, it's going
to actually, I think, to be honest, we were talking about voter suppression before the election. Democrats were talking. Turned out the biggest voter suppressant was Hillary Clinton. This was a terrible turnout for Democrats. It was not a presidential year turnout for them. It was, but they just didn't get, they were short a couple hundred thousand votes.
I think there were two things, and one is the top of the party didn't galvanize people the way it did in 2008 and 2012, that Hillary Clinton didn't turn out the votes.
And she didn't even turn up here.
She didn't turn up here, and I think Russ Feingold didn't galvanize people. I don't think, you were saying Ron Johnson and how he was able to outperform Trump. I do think the one big problem for Feingold was he didn't give people a compelling reason to send him to Washington for a fourth term. And so young people didn't turn out, and Milwaukee County didn't turn out for them. And So I think there was a wave that went across, happened across the country, but I also think that they're just...
Well, let's look at the... So in Wisconsin, the Republicans control all the levers of power at the state level. The only Democratic statewide office holder at the state level is Secretary of State, right? Tammy Baldwin in the... U.S. Senate. Is this a red state now? Are we still a swing state?
No. This is now a red state until the Democrats can show it's again a swing state. I believe they have gotten blown out in virtually every statewide race going back now since 2010, and they are. I mean, just look at that map. They have left out state to the Republicans.
I think it's still very much a bipolar state. You still have two. Fundamentally red communities. I mean, you have two fundamentally blue communities that will turn out if they like the candidate for.
But that's not enough anymore. They've given up. They've ceded the Green Bay Brown County area. They've ceded parts of the northwestern parts of the state.
Brown County was not that big a gap between the two candidates. Turnout ended up being almost exactly the same as last time.
Mike Gallagher won his congressional race by what, 30%?
He did win, and he was. He was a compelling candidate. But I think that you have several things going on. You also have redistricting that's been very beneficial to the Republicans.
Absolutely.
And, you know, I think somebody who very much benefited from this election is Tammy Baldwin, because the off-year elections tend to be very harsh to the candidate, to the party for the candidate who's in power. And so,
yeah. Well, let's talk a little bit about who is that next year. Are there any Republican rising stars that came out of this election? Any Democrats who are in the wings that, you know, they're going to have to run somebody against Scott Walker?
You got a race in 2 years, assuming Scott Walker runs for re-election.
Or
there.
Rebecca Clayfish or Robin Voss.
Yeah, whoever it is.
It's a small bench and it's getting smaller and smaller because the numbers in the Senate now are 20 to 13 or 21 to 12. You have a few people who are running around wanting to run. Joe Parisi, who's the Dane County executive, but no one outside of Dane County has ever heard of him. You have Schilling, assuming she ends up winning that race, and you have Representative Dana Walks, who's doing a whole lot, traveling around the state, wanting to run. But again,
he's a Democrat who uses Twitter. Imagine.
Yeah, but again. Have most people heard of any of these people? And the answer is no. And the difference between that and the last gubernatorial race is none of these people are independently wealthy.
Yeah, let's talk about another sort of trickle-down effect potentially of this election, and that's local office holder. Define him as a local office holder, but he's this national figure now, Sheriff David Clark in Milwaukee County. Does he take a job in the Trump administration? What are the odds?
First of all, it has to be offered. I don't know if it's been offered or will be offered.
There's a Politico story yesterday saying that he's one of the two major candidates to become the head of Homeland Security in the Trump administration. He responded by putting out a statement, this sort of Zen-like statement, saying, I'm currently the sheriff and I will continue to be sheriff until I'm no longer sheriff and then I won't be sheriff. I don't know what that means. But I think he will love the attention and will probably keep all of us in
suspense. Well, he certainly was out on the stump aggressively for Donald Trump, appearing on
the last four days
of the people who helped him.
And there were not many people who helped Trump. I mean, that is...
In the last 4 days of the race, he was in seven cities in five states campaigning for him. Yeah, he was very visible. Hillary Clinton had Beyonce and Donald Trump had Sheriff Clark. So
I don't know if his local record, you know, once his local record is known nationally, I don't know how that would determine things, whether he could be Homeland Security Secretary. His local record obviously is mixed.
Well, and not only that, he goes from overseeing a department with 250 deputies at most to running Homeland Security. That's a pretty big leap.
All right. Well, I think we're going to end this discussion here. Dan will be back for our next segment. Bill, you will be on the show the next time you're on the show, and you won't be on the show until you're on the show.
So if you
figure that out. So thanks for joining us today.
All right, we're back, and we have Dan Bice here, Mary Spicuzza here, and we're getting to some of our final segments. We're going to look at the winners and losers from Tuesday.
Dan's elections.
You've got your column out today, so we're going to start with talking about some of the ones you've got on there. The first loser you had, or one of the losers, is the Never Trump movement.
Right, the Never Trump movement, which started off strong as a movement and ends up as a hashtag and not much more than a footnote historically. They obviously didn't accomplish much. They didn't stop Trump from getting elected. So, they were one of my losers on the list. I think I had like 8 losers, and I had to stop at that point. I thought, there's probably more.
There are space limits, too. Yeah, but what do you think on that one? Is that a good call by...
Yeah, I think so. No offense to Christian Schneider and others, but I think it's interesting because Charlie Sykes obviously did that pretty brutal interview with Donald Trump, who called into his show, didn't seem to know that he was a never-Trumper. And, I was sitting in Miss Katie's diner interviewing Donald Trump during the primary, and there he was calling Charlie Sykes a dummy and a dum dum, and never thought I'd hear the leader of the free world calling somebody.
It was a hotbed of kind of never Trumpism.
It was
at least during the primary, but there were 7 talk radio people here who were members of the Never Trump movement
originally
in the primary. And it ended up being only 3, 4 of them abandoned that. So not that Charlie walks away without anything. He did get a book contract, and he got a contract with MSNBC.
I think he'll be okay.
Another loser you had, Dan, was political polling. Maybe that's the obvious loser of the night. But
yeah, obviously. Everybody was expecting. I think everybody with the people at the highest level, the Trump team, were expecting Hillary Clinton to win. And, everybody acted as if that's what they were expecting. And we could actually point to a particular time on election night, right around 9:30, where all of that changed, when Virginia didn't seem to be doing as well as all the polling suggested. And that's when people started saying, oh, maybe the polls aren't right.
Yeah, so it's amazing that many polls could be consistently that wrong. And these weren't like partisan polls
Is there anything to the idea that some of the Trump supporters didn't want to reveal that they were a Trump supporter when they were being polled, and that might have obscured some of it?
I can imagine that would be the case. I've definitely had interviews with some Trump supporters, even as recently as Saturday, where they really didn't want to talk, weren't interested in being interviewed, pretty defensive. And I'm sure that would skew a poll if somebody says they haven't decided.
The only thing is, it's hard to tell exactly how many people that is, because you don't know later if they're telling you the truth or not telling you the truth about whether they lied to the pollsters.
Let's zip through a couple of these other ones. You have Reince Priebus down as a winner.
We were talking about that. He went from, everyone thought he'd be 0-2 on presidential races, and if he was 0-2, his authority would have been undercut by that point. Yeah. But now they're talking about positions possibly in the Trump administration.
And Scott Walker, you had him down as a loser.
I did. I mean, look at him a year ago. Look at a year ago where he was. He was the fresh face of the party who might be the nominee. And today, where he very reluctantly supported Trump, and now, he's trying to recover in his own state.
And Trump talked about how he was the one to knock Scott Walker out of the primary, sent him packing like a little boy, the famous quote.
Right.
How he really trashed Governor Walker's performance in the state on multiple levels, the economy, education. During the primary, he was pretty harsh.
And Walker's numbers have not gotten to the point where they were when he decided to get into the race.
All right, a couple more here. You had Scott Fitzgerald as a winner.
He ends up, he was on the Trump train, probably one of the very first ones on the Trump train in Wisconsin, never got off the train. And then secondly, everybody expected him to lose support, lose numbers in the Senate. Instead, he gains at least one position, and now the numbers, he has 20 Republicans and 13 Democrats in the Senate.
All right, and one of your losers, speaking of the Senate, is Jennifer Schilling.
Jennifer Schilling said 2 weeks ago, I'm bullish on our chances to get 1 or 2 or maybe even 3 more seats, and she walks away with a tough race on her own and probably facing a recount for her own seat.
All right, and losing Julie Lassa, who was a long
Lassa,
time.
Right, been there for... in the Senate for a long time, since 2003.
And seemed genuinely pretty well-liked, who could work with both sides. So that's, I think, a loss for the Democrats.
And lastly, Dan Hederman asked Mary to comment first on Paul Ryan as a winner and a loser. How do you think Paul Ryan fared in this?
Anybody thought he was going to lose his election, so I feel like that was just kind of a given, so maybe we're being a little harsh on him. But I think, winner, Republican-controlled Congress, picking up seats in the House. Loser, he now has Donald Trump as president, which could be a win, but given their rocky relationship, it's kind of unclear how they'll work together, if he'll be able to keep the speaker spot, or if there will be Trump supporters still out for blood and his head on a platter. So I think his, you know, and that said, he did help a lot of Republican House members do fundraising and in their own reelection bids, so that might come back to help him.
So winner and loser.
Yeah, why did you? You're both winners and losers.
So
you're
both.
We got to fight about something.
Well, Adam is a winner because he wins a seat. He ends up getting more numbers of Republicans. I had him as a loser because there's the question of what's now. He and Donald Trump aren't always on the same page in terms of policy or personality, so they've got to deal with that.
All right, we're going to turn now to some viewer questions. So let's take a few. We've got quite a bit of many of them still even coming in. So here's one from, it says, Ron is my hero, and it says, Ronald Reagan made a successful transition.
Not Ron Johnson.
Ron Johnson. Maybe it is Ron Johnson. Yeah. I think it's Ronald Reagan. Ronald Reagan made a successful transition from being an actor to the president. Donald Trump, being a businessman rather than an actor, has a better background to run the country. Thoughts on that? I mean, Ronald Reagan was also the governor of California.
He took my line. Yeah. He did have a job in the interim that allowed him to practice it at being president on a smaller scale. We have no sense as to what Donald Trump is going to do as president because we haven't seen him in elected office before, but that's obviously one of his drawing points to his voters.
And Donald Trump was, you know, The Apprentice, so reality TV, not necessarily an actor, but kind of playing a trumped-up version of himself. And then I think, we haven't seen his tax return, his federal tax returns, to see how successful his businesses truly
were. Do you think we'll ever see his tax returns?
I guess if you don't have to release them when you're running for president, when do you have to release them? I don't know.
Yeah, that's a good question. Now, here was someone who said, why was New Hampshire such a state everybody had a concern for? It had only 4 votes in the Electoral College, but at boy, there were some scenarios where it could have come down as a tie or a near tie.
Right,
so any,
right.
Every state was important.
Every vote counts.
Yeah, and you know, at several points during the night of the election, I think things were just thrown into disarray because before the election, the debate was how many electoral votes will Hillary Clinton get? Will she get 320-some? Will she get 290-some? Will she get 270? No one was laying out scenarios in which Donald Trump was going to get close to 300 or maybe more than 300.
All right, I've got a couple more here. This is one from the name is hashtag Epic Fail. It says, you media elitists got it all wrong. How many actual real live voters did you talk to during the election? Have you ever been outside of Milwaukee and Madison?
I'm a product of the public school system in Appalachian State, so I don't know if I'm a media elitist. But in my winners and losers, one that we didn't touch on, I had journalists as losers because we were wrong about Donald Trump every step of his path to the presidency. But it wasn't just us. You know, journalism has become like Moneyball, where we see everything through the numbers. And maybe this is a good time for us to reflect on having the polls drive our coverage so much.
I have been outside of Milwaukee.
Certainly you've been talking to voters. But I mean, right. There was something I saw, and I think it was in the Margaret Sullivan column in the Washington Post, where she was quoting someone else saying, well, you know, the difference between the journalists and the public was the journalists didn't take Donald Trump seriously, but they took him literally. So they'd say, he's going to build a wall. Well, how are you going to build a wall? How are you going to deport these people? While Trump supporters took him, it didn't take him literally, but they took him seriously. And they said, well, okay, yeah, he may not build a wall, but he's... we know he's going to take care of immigration because of that message.
But I think as journalists, it's part of our job to ask people about what they say they're going to do as president. So if Donald Trump says, I'm going to deport 11 million immigrants who are in the country illegally, it's our job to ask, how are you going
to
do that?
It's hard to brush it aside and say, he's not really going to do
right.
it.
Right. Well, actually, Ron Johnson, when we asked Senator Johnson about it, he said, he's not really going to do that.
What would PolitiFact do if we don't take people at what they're worth?
Right, that's one of the... striking things about this campaign is that there was more of that disconnect on that side of like, well, maybe I mean that, maybe I don't, or it's easily to switch your
But it's funny position. Because the same people who criticized the media then said, and then I was watching TV and I learned about the Clinton emails and that the FBI was going to look at
there
more
is.
Of them, and you're like, so you like the email, you like the media when they're looking into Hillary Clinton's background, but you don't like the media if they're raising critical questions about Donald Trump's. So I think that both sides kind of have this, you know, maybe they can bond over their hatred of the media or something.
I do think that there is something to be said about the fact that Democrats use traditional methods this election to try to get Hillary Clinton elected. They went to 400,000 doors in Wisconsin on the final weekend of the race. Republicans weren't doing that sort of thing. It was almost through the sheer force of Trump's celebrity and personality that he was able to get people out and didn't use the traditional methods of electioneering. So I don't know how we deal with that in the future, because most of us as journalists are used to the polling, the door-to-door campaigning, the canvassing, all of those things that went on. And Donald Trump wasn't good at any of those things.
And I think Donald Trump throughout his career has benefited from media coverage, whether he was a playboy or a businessman in New York at The Apprentice. So I think that it's a little disingenuous to say that the media has attacked him his whole career, because I think he's certainly been bolstered by the media.
All right. Well, that's where we're going to leave our discussion for today and the show for today. We'll be back next week at the usual time. We live in interesting times, so there'll be lots more to talk about, including the future of David Clark and Reince Priebus and Paul Ryan.
Probably
and many more things
future.
in the coming weeks. So thanks for joining us today.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.